Welcome to MicroWorth Talks. I'm your host, Xavier Gallego, VP of Brand and Marketing, and I'm delighted to take you with me on our journey to grow the future of materials. Thank you for tuning in. Today, we're going to talk to Elytra Wiedemann, fashion icon, food writer, and executive director of Mama Farm. We will learn about her connection with MicroWorth and the fashion industry, and also how we can take learnings from regenerative agriculture and apply them to the fashion space. Stay tuned, let's get started. Hi, Elytra, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I mean, it's so nice to see you or hear you again. I remember when we met in 2020 when we were launching Reishi in New York. And since then, you've been a close friend and advisor. So can you tell us a little bit your relationship with MicroWorth and how and why did you get to us?
Well, for me, you know, I was really friendly with Matt Scullin, who is your CEO. He and I went to high school together. I have many fond memories of hanging out with Matt. And, you know, we stayed in touch loosely after we left for college and kind of grew up. And one day he called me and asked me out for lunch in New York City, and we met at a place that no longer exists anymore, sadly, called Maialino. And in his bag, he had this beautiful sample of, I think, one of the first prototypes of what you guys were working on. And at the time, it was, you know, it was already beautiful, and it was already clear to my eye that it was going to be something really fantastic. And, you know, he was kind of asking me questions about, you know, what do you think and what's the best way to kind of get the word out about this? And we were just kind of trading intel, so to speak. And then he reached out to me sometime later when I think you guys had really refined the process and the production process and you were ready to kind of go for it and scale. And I was so excited to see what it had developed into. And I was so enthusiastic to be able to try to help however I could, because obviously the product itself is really beautiful and luxurious, and then it has all these kind of added environmental benefits, which is something I've been really passionate about since I was a small child. So I was eager and excited to kind of help however I could.
That's amazing. So I'm imagining, but I want to ask anyways, was that the first time that you heard the word mycelium?
Well, I know that mycelium, I had heard the word mycelium before. Had I ever imagined that it could turn into a leather-like product in the way that you guys have developed? No, absolutely not. I mean, even that first lunch with Matt, you know, where he was explaining the process of how you guys were creating it, it was totally blowing my mind. I mean, it's really so cool.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, but do you remember when was the first time that you heard the word?
You know, I've always been very into environmentalism since I was a small child, and it's kind of a area of knowledge that I gravitate towards. When I was a kid, I was a subscriber to things like National Geographic and all kinds of science magazines. So I'm not really sure the first time that I heard the word, but I was familiar with it. But, you know, when I said the word mycelium, I would picture more, you know, mushrooms popping up on the forest floor, or, you know, that kind of spidery network that you see poking over dead trees. It wasn't ever something that I could imagine could be turned into a luxury fashion product, for sure.
Yeah, and you've been really helpful at educating people and being able to transform that vision of fungi as a mushroom and as a little thing on the corner, a mold, to something that could be beautiful and it can be a product and could be useful. So you've been a key element into that conversation and education to the people since the beginning. So we appreciate you for that.
Thank you. I'm so glad.
Of course. So most of your career, for those that they don't know and they're listening, is in the fashion industry. I was wondering, like, what are the key takeaways, learnings that you had in that industry? And if you learned about sustainability there, or you had like curiosity before? It sounds like you were interested before then started working in the fashion industry.
I mean, my family's in the fashion industry, so in a way, I was always kind of exposed to it. My parents actually met on a Calvin Klein shoot when they were young models. So I've always been in the industry. People in the industry were in and out of my house my whole life. I never really pictured myself getting into the industry because, as Matt will tell you, I had a back brace for 6 years of my life and through my adolescence, and teeth braces to boot. So, you know, my self-image didn't really correspond with the, the model, the fashion models. But eventually, and I went to college and I got recruited to be a model, and that really took me by surprise. But, you know, it was very exciting and the money was great and there was this opportunity to travel. And so despite my disbelief that I was, you know, doing this and it was happening, I did it. And I think it was a really important lesson for me to learn, especially like now, you know, running the Mama Farm brand, is like that presentation is so important. And I don't really even think that that's just unique to the fashion space. I think people are really visual, and if it doesn't look good and if it doesn't feel good, it's really not going to work. It doesn't matter how well-intentioned any given product is. You really have to have that luxury and polish for it to kind of get into circulation. And that was an important lesson for me to learn just as a human being, because honestly, you know, I was always a tomboy my whole life and I never really cared about what I looked like or dressed like. And obviously I had these kind of, you know, back brace and braces my whole life. So I was like doubly not that interested in all of that. But I really did realize through my time in the fashion industry that, as superficial as it may sound to some, these things really matter. And it's something that has informed my adulthood in a really interesting way. And I think when it comes to luxury retail products that have an eco-friendly quality, it's really important that it's just as luxurious, just as beautiful as the quote-unquote normal product or the product that people are used to. Hmm. And I think that's something you guys have done with aplomb, you know? And once that's there, then it's just kind of off to the races.
Well, it is inspired by a conversation that we had, to be honest. I don't know if you remember it, but I remember that you said you only have one first impression. And I'm like, oh my God, that's such a good quote. I'm going to keep it. I'm going to make it mine, you know, because what we do here is we know what we're doing is difficult. We know that educating people is difficult, but you only have a very short amount of time to get people educated as well. You know, you have to explain something really difficult in very short time. It has to look good. So yeah, you inspired a lot in the branding of Mycoworks and Reishi and all the products that we have here. And we were chatting, I was telling you that it shows off on Mama Farm as well, like the care that you have on the content that you're creating. It's spot on. So kudos to you. And I mean, and thanks for that quote, by the way.
Well, thank you. I can't take credit for that quote. It actually comes from my grandfather, Fred Wiedemann, who would be very happy to hear that quote has reverberated through space-time. He is now no longer with us. But I do think about that quote all the time, and I'm glad it resonated with you too. And it's absolutely true. You only have one chance to make a first impression, so it better be great.
Yeah. Again, it's like one big learning. So you were in the fashion industry and then you decided to transition into more like a probably really common to you, but very different world, which is like regenerative agriculture. Like how were you transitioning from fashion into agriculture?
Ooh, yeah, it's a very long, tangled road. But I mean, the short story is that, you know, I was working and modeling and traveling the world. And then, you know, that was really fun. And then I realized one day that my brain had just kind of turned to mush and I was not happy with that. And I was not proud of myself. So I decided to kind of finish up my college education, because while the modeling started up, I suspended it. And I finished up my college education in New York City at the New School. And then I ended up applying to grad school at the London School of Economics. And while I was there, I was getting a master's of science in this program called like biomedicine, biotechnology, and biosociety, you know, all these big words that were very complicated. And it was such a theoretical, complicated master's degree for me and for my brain. And ultimately, you know, I was kind of lost in literature, and the UK education system is very like, you go to lecture, they give you 800 pages of reading, and that's pretty much it. I mean, you can go to your professor's office hours, but you better have like a very good question to ask, because if you don't have a question to ask, you'll definitely get a little ridiculed. So, you know, I was just in the library all the time reading and trying to understand all this stuff. And then I started just kind of thinking like, okay, how do I make all of this really simple. I'm just going to start tying it to what I'm eating. I'm going to start with this bowl of oatmeal in the morning. I remember exactly the moment I had that thought. I used to wake up at 4:35 in the morning to get through all the literature because I was just drowning.
Wow.
And I was standing over my little flat kitchen counter with my roommates, my flatmates. And I just had this moment where I was staring at my oatmeal and I said, okay, what if I try to think about it through this lens? And then everything started kind of making sense and it all started getting very concrete and real in my mind. And then I started studying food policy and food systems more, and I ended up writing my dissertation on vertical farming, which exists now all over the world, but they didn't exist at the time. And it was a very theoretical thing. And I did a, you know, cross-disciplinary analysis on it. And when I came back to work in the fashion industry, I realized like so much of what I really cared about, which was really nature conservation, really could be impacted. And around this same time, there was kind of the farm to table movement really happening and galloping and, you know, getting a lot of traction among popular culture. And so I launched this goodness pop-up concept, which was basically I was traveling all over the world, as were many other fashion models and editors, going to Paris and London and New York and Tokyo, and everybody would kind of be in one neighborhood the whole time because, you know, most of the shows would be in one particular neighborhood. So you wouldn't really get to explore a city and its kind of culinary offerings. So Goodness Pop-Up was a singular pop-up that had a different chef and a different menu every day with kind of like the up-and-coming culinary talent in that city.
Yeah.
And everything was locally sourced. And it was like a huge hit.
And that was happening around all the models and where the industry was happening? It's like the location was
so big. So for example, the first Goodness pop-up was right outside of Lincoln Center. Fashion Week used to be at Bryant Park. Then they decamped to Lincoln Center. I don't know where it is now because I haven't been involved in so long. But there was a hotel restaurant that was inside a hotel, and they were run by lovely people, and they were trying to get more people to come in their door. And so they partnered with me, and we did this thing, and it was hugely popular. So we ended up popping up a few more times at a few other past fashion weeks, and even going to Iceland's Design March Festival in Reykjavik. Yeah. And it was a concept that really worked, and that was exciting to me. But I ultimately realized that I don't really love working in hospitality. And well,
it was a very clever way to solve a problem for yourself, right? Like, you go to a city, you cannot experience it. What if I get the best in the city right next to me, and maybe more people will like it, right? And it was successful.
Yeah, and it was successful. And I think it was also successful because there were a lot of young chefs who wanted to get in front of these people, and they couldn't figure out how to get them there. And so the chefs were happy to come and cook in a different kitchen for a night and talk about their new menu at their new place on the Lower East Side or whatever, you know. So it kind of worked for everybody and got them in front of a group of people who would really help make them a successful brand or a successful restaurant. So it was a good idea that worked well, and I started getting approached by people to kind of make Goodness a pop-up that would happen at Cannes and at Abu Dhabi and at Dubai. And I was like, whoa. I was like, I do not know, you know, if that's really what I want to do. I have a streak of gray hair on the top right corner of my head. And that came from Goodness. I mean, I aged. It was so fun, but it was also so stressful, and it just stressed me out. But it still meant that it actually aged me a little bit. And I just thought, you know, I don't really want to do this for my life. So I stopped. But the food kind of claws were in me. And so from there, I got into food writing and food styling and food photography. And I launched a blog. Then that turned into a cookbook. And then I got pregnant. And then my husband said, you know, I don't really want to live in the city with a small child. Let's go move out to your country house near your mom and just try it for 6 months and see if we like it. And that's where Mama Farm is. And, you know, I'm an entrepreneurial person and I like working. And at the time, the farm was kind of this beautiful place as it is now, but it didn't have a name and it didn't really have its feet under it. It was kind of this cloudy, nebulous concept that some people in the neighborhood knew about, but others didn't. And it was so, you know, I just got involved and I took the reins and gave it a name, Mama Farm, and created branding and really studied what the other farms in this neighborhood do and really work hard to not do what they do so that I don't compete with them. And you know, we have a unique offering. I don't want to compete with them because I love the other farmers in this neighborhood. And I think there's way more than enough space for everybody. So, you know, Mama Farm, I feel like contributes and enhances to what's out here without kind of detracting from the other farmers and all the hard work that they're putting into their land.
It is amazing that I can see now the relation between fashion and Mama Farm, you know?
Oh,
you started, like,
yeah, thank you.
Of course, like you started like your journey while you were traveling and trying to bring people together through food. And you're interested in chefs and discovering new flavors. And now, like, you maybe cannot travel or probably you want to be in a more quiet place. But you still, like, have that kind of bringing people together through food and through education and through learning, which is really cool. Since you launched, I've been following. And again, like, the brand is spot on. So you have that business perspective on, like, let's do this, but let's do it right. So it's really, really cool. Mama Farm is, like, definitely a good inspiring place. I've been learning a lot. Can I share something that I learned from the stuff that you shared?
Yes, I would love to.
I knew that eggs had different colors, but you showed so many variations of eggs and colors that it blew my mind. I didn't know that there were that many colors.
Yes, aren't they beautiful?
Amazing.
And you know, you want to know something else that's really fascinating about eggs that I didn't know until I worked on a farm?
Go on.
Egg production is timed with the sun. Did you know that?
No.
I had no idea. The chickens are timed with the light in the sky. It's so incredible. So
amazing.
October to December, as the light in the sky is getting darker and darker, there's very little eggs. I mean, maybe a chicken occasionally produces an egg. The solstice, though, is around December 21st every year, give or take a few days. I swear to God, 3 days later, bam, as the light in the sky comes back even 10, 20 seconds more, the chickens start producing more and more eggs.
It's just so
and the
crazy.
Same goes is true for in June. When the solstice in June comes, which is actually kind of the light in the sky going away, day by day, you just start slowly seeing less and less eggs. It's so fascinating, and it connects you to your food and to nature in such an incredible way. And I'm not even a chicken person, but like when I found that out about them, I was like, oh, you guys are like little goddesses, like little light goddesses. It's like so incredible.
It's so
you know,
cool.
Magical.
You know, one of the things that Phil Ross, our co-founder, was doing a lot is observation of nature and learning from it. And I think that when you start observing patterns and you start observing things, you can learn so much and you can make things with it, right? Like now you know that the sun affects the chickens and you know your production. And I don't know, like it feels like if we observe nature, like we can learn so much from it.
Yes, absolutely. And I need to get better about that. I mean, you know, the farm has me running around doing this and that, and I'm certainly more educated now than I was when I was living in the city and not working on a farm. But, you know, to really take the time to slow down and observe nature and see what's there is a very meditative practice that I'm trying to get better at. And it's absolutely so true that you can learn so much.
Do you still connect it with the fashion industry at all?
You know, I don't anymore. I mean, I have friends in the fashion industry who I will love and adore and support forever. And I'm still very friendly with them. But as far as the industry itself, I can't remember the last time I picked up a fashion magazine. and, you know, I don't even mean that in a bad way. It's just my life is so not, you know, I don't even need like a nice dress anymore. Like, you know, I need like really sturdy shoes and like some really hefty overalls. So it was just kind of a time in my life. And maybe as I get older, it'll come back in. But right now it feels a bit foreign to me. I couldn't even tell you like who the hottest designer is right now.
Well, everything goes really fast nowadays. So it's hard to predict. You've been involved in many worlds. You've been studying biology and food and sustainability and all that stuff. I wanted to hear your thoughts around the future of fashion or where do you think that fashion should be going in terms of sustainability?
Gosh, I mean, I can tell you where I hope that it goes.
Let's
I don't know
go.
If that's going to happen.
Wishful thinking.
You know, I hope that there's a farm to fashion movement, just like there was a farm to table movement.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're seeing it a little bit more now. I think that there's a bit more of a conversation in the mainstream about, you know, the negative effects of fast fashion and disposable fashion. But there hasn't been this connection to the idea that, you know, your clothes start on a farm or in nature somehow, whether it's dyes or whether it's cotton or wool, you know, all of these start on a farm, just like your beautiful product starts in like a, I know it's not a traditional farm, but it's a production of sorts. And if people could just get more connected to the source of what they're wearing. I think it would have huge ripple effects on the way that people relate to their clothes, not dispose of them so quickly, you know, connect to artisans, the people who are making these beautiful products with their own hands and not machines, and kind of the human stories behind these items. I mean, that would be my dream, but I don't know if that's going to happen or not. You know, we do offer programming at Mama Farm about wool, and I see that there's a lot of interest, and I hope that that kind of grows, but I don't know if like the wider industry will pick up on it so easily. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, you know what you made me think? If you know how much it takes to grow a tomato, once you eat a tomato, once you will appreciate it more, right? If you know how much it takes to produce the clothes that you have, you will appreciate them more. So that's what you made me think right now. Because like I remember growing tomatoes and it was a pain in the ass. And after that...
It's a pain in the ass. You're totally right.
And I have to be careful of every single animal that exists and you've never seen them. And I don't know, like you made me think about that. There's more relationship between a farm and in the fashion industry that we can imagine. So it's pretty interesting that you opened my mind that way. So thank you for that.
It's also about, you know, like local economies, you know, like, I mean, there used to be the whole Northeast. I'm based in New York State. The whole Northeast used to be a whole mill economy where they would shear sheep and create wool and create products. And that entire industry has been dismantled and mills are abandoned or they're not here anymore. And that's like people's lives. That's people's livelihoods. I mean, you could draw a line from that to like the kind of social distress unrest that we're experiencing today. So like, it has real impacts. And when it's about appreciating the product itself, like you're saying, and that's absolutely true. And I also firmly believe that once you meet the people or have a connection to the people who are making your clothes from the beginning through the end, it's precious. And then you treasure it. And that's such an important emotion to have. There's nothing like it, really.
Yeah. We will not care only for the designers that make the clothes, but also the fabricators that are making it and where the material is coming from. So I think like caring about all that stuff will make a better fashion industry, I guess.
Absolutely.
That's so cool. So, Electra, the last question I ask to everybody that I have the honor to talk to, it's very simple, but also I love hearing all the different responses that I get. So I want to hear from you. What does sustainability mean to you?
You know, because I like to think of everything very small, because that's how my brain works, just like I explained with the LSE and looking at everything through the lens of my oatmeal. To me, sustainability means walking through the places that I hike now with my kids and doing those same hikes with my grandchildren and seeing the same wildlife that I see now and the same bugs and the same plant life. And obviously, the world must grow and develop and all of that's going to happen. But to me, sustainability is about figuring out how to do that without killing off and removing this essential wilderness, which provides so many critical services for us, including things like oxygen production, beyond just, you know, the beauty of it and the peace of walking in the forest with your children. You know, it's really about kind of how do we conserve these swaths of land that make life on Earth possible.
Well, thank you. I'm always amazed by the answers because they're all different and they're all amazing. So,
thank you.
Yeah, Electra, that's it. Thank you so much for your time. I hope that I can see you soon in New York or wherever you are. Come and visit Mama Farm.
Come to Mama Farm. You guys have to come take a little trip
out
here.
I would love that. I have a 4-year-old that might go bananas when they see the chicken. So
we would love that anytime. Yeah.
I would love that. So thank you so much for your time again, and I hope that we can talk to you soon.
Thank you. Me too. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed as much as I did hosting it. We are thrilled to have you with us in our journey. So if you want to learn more, please follow our Instagram page at MikeWorks. For our latest news and more. This episode is being produced by Maddie Nathans, sound editing by Corny Ballardo, content editing by Chantal Otto.